Hey guys, it's Lebo here to tell you about your new favorite go-to underwear, undershirt, and sock brand, Mr. Davis. It's a local KC company with the most comfortable undergarments you'll ever wear. I'll never wear another brand again. Go to MrDavis.com/810 for your new favorite undergarments.
Sports Saturday continues on here on Sports Radio 8.
My hope is that more Missourians hear that and there's an extra little encouragement perhaps that that the football team is taking it seriously and taking the vaccine, that maybe it will be encouraging to the people around them. I don't know if it will be or not, but for whatever reason, I continue to try to be hopeful about some of that stuff. So, another thing that came up with Andy Reid yesterday was circling around Frank Clark. He obviously, we now know, was arrested twice on illegal gun possession charges over the course of this offseason. And Andy Reid, speaking about it for the first time since that news came out, was asked about his reaction to Frank Clark's arrests.
Yeah, so listen, I obviously stay in communication with all our players during the break the best way I possibly can. So I have had a chance to talk with Frank. I'm not going to get into that. There's nothing that has taken place up to this point. Frank will be here, and we'll go forward with that. And obviously, we keep tabs on it, and his people will keep tabs on their side of it, and we move forward. So that's where we're at now, but he will be here. Not now, but in a couple days here when the veterans come in.
So presumably he'll be there on Monday. Andy Reid said he talked to him, and then he wasn't going to tell you what he said to him. That's basically the gist of it. One other little bit from it, though. Andy Reid was asked if there's sort of a timeline on anything in terms of decisions being made from the league or anything on Frank Clark, if there'll be any discipline handed down from the NFL.
I think we'll just play it out here, Saran, and just see how that works. I really don't have specifics for you. Nothing's really taken place there yet, and so we'll just see how things go down the road with that.
Short, sweet, and probably about all we're going to get from Andy Reid on that front. The one other thing there that I thought was interesting is a later question about the defensive end position with some uncertainty around Frank Clark and really the defensive end position as a whole. They obviously just brought Alex Okafor back. So here's what Andy Reid had to say about the defensive end group.
Yeah, so listen, we brought old 97 back and put him back in the mix here last week, so I think that's a good addition, and yeah, I think we're going to be okay there. And we've got a couple of young guys that we think are good football players too. So let me add this to you too, and just a reminder that Chris was working both spots, so we have the flexibility to move Chris out there, and that's where the Jerron Reed part of this, I think, was a big addition that Veach added to us.
That pause in there was actually longer before I edited it down. Andy Reid had fully sort of just like answered the question, kind of, you know, didn't brush it off, but he answered it relatively concisely. And then a second later went, you know what, hey, actually, let me make this point as well. We've got Chris Jones essentially playing the defensive end position now. Don't forget that element of this, because we are using that as something that we think is important in terms of how this defensive line looks. And so I think it's very noteworthy to note that Andy Reid, he could have just let the rest of that question go, but he specifically went back and mentioned two names without being asked about them, which is Chris Jones and Jerron Reed. And the Chiefs have pretty consistently, Reed, the coaching staff, even Brett Veach, pretty consistently have talked about those two guys quite a bit in a way that I think is worth taking note of, because they really do anticipate Chris Jones getting a significant amount of work at the defensive end spot, in part because Jerron Reed allows Chris Jones to move out without necessarily putting them in a bad spot on the interior defensive line. I think that's all worth noting. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and I want you to hear something about Big 12 and conference realignment storylines. And then towards the end of the show today, I feel pretty good, based off of Marco's ingenious producing, that we're going to be able to bring you Cornell Powell, Trey Smith, and Noah Gray. We'll try to bring you all three of those guys before Sports Saturday wraps up. But coming up next, we've talked about the White Hot Royals, now the simply melting down Big 12. We'll talk about that next.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Run.
Welcome back to Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, your host for the day. Later on, coming up on the show, we'll bring Cornell Powell, Noah Gray, and Trey Smith. This speaking from St. Joe, a few members of the Chiefs rookie class speaking as rookies and quarterbacks reported and had their first practice earlier this morning. Also talked to Alec Lewis of The Athletic about some Royal stuff. If you missed any of that, I think it'll end up on the additional programming section of 810WHB.com, the 810 mobile app, etc., etc. One thing that you may have heard, maybe didn't hear if you weren't listening real late in the night last night, if you're a Saturday morning person, you are an incredibly rare breed. So I'm assuming that you've not had the chance to hear this yet, because last night on Almost Entirely Sports, which you can also get at 810WHB.com, the 810 mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts, we talked to Ari Temkin. And he covers the Cowboys in Dallas, but more importantly for our conversation here, he's a part of SiriusXM's Big 12 channel and has obviously his finger on the pulse of what exactly is going on around the Big 12 right now as Texas and OU are gone. I mean, it's not official yet, but it's all but. And then after that, we're going to see a Big 12 with eight teams that have to figure out what happens next. We talked to him last night on Almost Entirely Sports, and I thought he gave us an incredible amount of excellent content that really helped reframe how I was thinking about some of the things that the Big 12 is going to be going through, conference realignment and all of that. And one of the first things I asked here in this chunk of our conversation, you'll hear, you can hear the full thing if you go download the podcast. But one of the things that I started off with was about how blindsided the Big 12 either was or wasn't, and how surprised Ari was to hear the news that Texas and Oklahoma were making the jump to the SEC.
I was shocked. All of my sources inside the Big 12 say that they didn't know this was happening. I find that hard to believe. I'll tell you why. A few months ago, it was leaked. It wasn't just leaked. I mean, Texas Tech's president came out and said that it happened, that the Big 12 had hired a consultant to reach out to its media partners at ESPN and Fox and basically try to get a deal worked out through 2030. Texas Tech's president said that it happened. They were rebuffed. Basically, they went to the network, said, hey, we'll do a discount, but we want long-term security. We want to be locked up to 2030. And they said, no, we'll play this thing to 2025 and then renegotiate around that time. And my guess is they were doing that in part to create the long-term viability. They knew that something like this could happen. Do they know in particular Oklahoma and Texas will be looking getting out? No. Because I do think that at that time, that might have been the start of this for the University of Texas. Texas started this thing. You know, Big Bad Texas has started this thing, and I think Oklahoma realized they had no future in the Big 12 without Texas, and so they followed suit. But I do think that the Big 12 was worried about its long-term viability. I don't think they were caught by surprise. I certainly was, and again, my sources inside the Big 12 didn't give me any information in terms of, you know, how surprised they were.
Could the Big 12 have handled this differently to have avoided this, or was this a foregone conclusion that eventually Texas was going to leave?
Okay, let's go back to the super teams. So LeBron James was on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and for him to go back to Cleveland, he had to have all of the power. He was the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So he was able to hire coaches, and he brought in his buddies to play with him. And the issue with that, Josh, is when things go wrong, the organization can't say, but you were in charge. This is your responsibility, right? LeBron, in that case, is not going to be introspective enough to admit that he's made the mistakes. He's going to put the blame elsewhere. It's the same thing that James Harden did really with the Rockets too. Okay, so let's go back 10 years now.
Yeah.
When the league almost blew up.
Yep.
And the reason it didn't is because the Big 12 gave Texas and Oklahoma all of the power. The thing that I've noticed about the way that the Big 12 is situated relative to other conferences is other conferences have more centralized power. The Big 12 doesn't. They admittedly work at the request of the member institutions. That's the super team thing, right? Yeah. And so when you give them the power and things go wrong, they're not going to blame themselves. They're going to blame you.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here.
So what can they do next then? If the power brokers of the conference go, I mean, we've seen some reports about, teams, the KU and Iowa State making calls to the Big Ten, or teams having contingency plans, the Big 12 having the meeting where they, apparently option one is to try to keep the Big 12 together, but it sounds like every team is sort of, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, my hunch is that every team at the meeting is saying, no, let's keep this thing together, while they're all sort of planning their solo careers as soon as they leave that room. What is your read on that in terms of what comes next?
Yeah, I think you perfectly characterized it, Josh. I mean, it's everybody's together until it, it gets in the way of everybody's own self-interest. I'm curious what the play here is from Bob Bowlesby, because, look, I mean, the obvious piece is the American Athletic Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Cincinnati and Memphis and SMU and Houston and Tulsa. And, if they added value to this conference, they'd be in this conference.
Mm.
So the fact remains, they're not in this conference because they didn't add value. And they don't suddenly add value because you've lost the two most important pieces to this conference. So, it's like take two of my best things and replace it with four or five average things.
Right.
And that doesn't add up to your two best things. If I am my alma mater, for instance,
mm-hmm.
if I'm Kansas, I am listening to what the plan is. But if Bob Bowlesby comes back and says, the plan is we're going to add Cincinnati and Houston and SMU and Memphis, and I'm out. I'm Pac-12, ACC, Big Ten, who wants me? That's what I'm doing. Because this is a arms race, and the SEC is going to hand out 60, maybe 70, who knows what their TV contract will be with the additions of Oklahoma and Texas, maybe $70 million per team per year. To put that in perspective, the Big 12 was third this year with money handed out from its television partners at around $36
million.
So that adds up and compounds every single year. And if they're getting $36 million now with Texas and Oklahoma, what is it with Tulsa and Houston and SMU replacing them?
Yeah.
It ain't 36. And money is going to – money helps. Money is helping many of these programs in the SEC become premier programs. It's the reason the SEC recruits on a different level of everybody else. So you can't be losing 2-1 from a money standpoint to the big bag, this big bag conference without a fight. You've got to go – look for your best route. Now here's the part where I try to save the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we've got brand new leaders of the ACC and the Pac-12. They're also in trouble. Well, they're not losing their biggest, best brands, but they're in trouble because the Pac-12's already been, the Pac-12 is fifth of the Power Fives in their money that they get from their television contract. They've got a bad TV deal. It's almost up, but they have even worse network, and that's what George Klyevkov, the new commissioner, is tasked with. The ACC, meanwhile, has a really bad TV deal that's not up until 2036.
Hmm.
And they locked that thing in with ESPN so they can get their own network. But they're fourth. So they're falling behind even more. And this is an arms race. So none of these three conferences can stand pat. If there's only going to be four conferences left, the Big 12 certainly looks like the one most on the brink, but they also have the most, the best leadership. The only leadership of these three, Klyavkov and Phillips, that have negotiated a television deal. So, if I'm the Big 12 and I'm Bob Bowlesby, I am trying to pillage the ACC or the Pac-12 because their futures are as bleak as the Big 12's, because they're also losing money year after year after year, 2-1 to the SEC.
What an interesting, Game of Thrones twist that it has to be trying happen behind closed doors right now. Like, that is, because that I was going to try to figure out, all right, so what is the plan for the Big 12 if adding, like you said, Houston and Carolina or whatever, or Cincinnati, if that's not going to be enough to move the needle, which I agree, I don't know. If it would have moved the needle, they could have been
you
in the Big 12 already.
You just called them Carolina, Josh.
I did.
Think about how little that moves the needle.
That's really bad.
But it's a great Freudian slip, right? It's like the perfect Freudian slip,
It's the C. The team that starts with a C,
Cincinnati.
Yeah. Like Houston's totally Game of Thrones too. Houston's logo literally goes ugh. Like it's ugh. That's their logo is UH intersecting. Like yeah, of course. Because yeah, you're right. If they would have been really helpful to the Big 12, the Big 12 could have gotten 12 teams back and tried to poach them sooner. So the funny thing that with what you're laying out there that I honestly had no idea of, that really the Big 12 by a lot of metrics would have been the next best option for the non-SEC caliber teams, but they're losing two teams, so they're the ones that do look like the injured elephant at the back of the pack that's about to get picked off. How realistic do you think it is that Bob Bowlsby and the guys you mentioned that have done some TV contracts and all of that are right now trying to poach somebody from these other conferences? And is there any inkling for you of who it might be that they could be realistically targeting right now?
Yeah, I mean, from a Pac-12 perspective, there's been some talk about, well, what about Arizona or Arizona State? Could you poach the Arizona schools? There was a report that came out today, too, that, the Pac-12 and the Big 12 were talking about merging. And it's like, yeah, but somebody wins there. Like, at the end of the day, there's two different conferences. And so if two becomes one, then which conference is it?
Yeah. The Big Pack.
So, look. But like, where's the office? Is it? They're going to move from Northern California now, I think, to Vegas, which is a good move for the Pac-12's headquarters. But is it in Irving, Dallas, or it's one conference. It's a Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. There's backstabbing. There is. I mean, it's a House of Cards. It's Game of Thrones. It is exactly some of our favorite television shows because there's backroom deals going on in the front end of it. You're trying to make peace with your current conference and try to keep the cohesion. It does seem unrealistic for the Big 12 to be able to pull in current ACC or Pac-12 members, given, hey, if I'm in the ACC, why would I want to leave? But again, I think if you look at this realistically, that you need movement from an ACC perspective too. And from a Pac-12 perspective too, you can't stand pat. The money doesn't lie here, and that's what everybody knows, and that's the reason that this move is happening for Oklahoma and Texas. So, I mean, I definitely look at this a lot more pessimistically, which sucks for me, and my employment working at SiriusXM, the Big 12 channel. But I will say, don't underestimate Bob Bowlsby and the Big 12. I don't think that they were as caught with their pants down here as everybody seems to think they are. As I kind of laid out, this was a conference controlled by Texas and Oklahoma, and then they're mad at the Big 12 when Big 12 isn't in control. Well, I mean, that's because that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
So, I would be surprised if Bob Bowlsby came back with, we tried to poach conference schools from the AAC. And even if that is the case, It's clearly the fifth of the Power Five, but a Power Five nonetheless, I think. And at the end of the day, that's also important here.
Okay, so I have a few more things. One of them is very procedural that I just need an adult to tell me the right answer for. When does Oklahoma and Texas start playing games in the SEC? Like, when is that actually happening as things currently stand?
So, Game of Thrones here, Oklahoma and Texas are waiting for the Big 12 to disappear. Because they owe, at a minimum, because of the grant of rights, they owe basically the league their pay for a year. So $36 million plus $36 million for each program, right? So you do the math there. That's what they would owe, okay? So it's the University of Texas. They have an infinite amount of money. Literally, they can at any point in time bring any of their amount of boosters together and say, we need $70 million or $150 million, and they'll get it. Like, that money's of no object to them. What I do think is part of their grant of rights is they don't own their rights until after it's up, meaning they can't go collect television money from the SEC until 2025. And so that's the bigger piece here. They are probably going to try to come to some sort of a buyout where they can then own their rights, get their rights back, be able to cash in that money right away from an SEC perspective, or they hope that the Big 12 will dissolve so it all goes away, poof, or they'll wait it out and make it as awkward as they possibly can.
That's awkward is exactly the right word, I think, because it's sort of, it's like whenever you say goodbye to somebody and then you walk the same direction, but then you walk the same direction until 2025. It's like, yeah, that's, that is an awkward one.
And also you want to kill that person.
Right. You just had a fist fight and then started walking the same direction to your car for four more years. If the Big 12 does end up at a point where clearly, like, they are, if it's the Jenga Tower and Texas and OU were the blocks that got pulled, what's the best case scenario specifically for Kansas in your mind?
I would say the Big 10.
Yeah.
Or the ACC. And I would like to believe, as a KU homer, that we are Power Five material, despite
right.
our football program being, you know, FCS material.
Right.
And I'd like to think they are. And I mean, if not to the Big Ten, certainly to the ACC, which has, you know, an incredible basketball conference.
Yeah.
But maybe it would be staying in the Big Ten, the Big 12, because let's say they go the AAC route and they add, you know, a Cincinnati or a SMU. I mean, these are decent basketball programs. By the way, Iowa State has historically had a pretty good basketball program. Baylor just won a national championship. Texas Tech still pretty good with Mark Adams taking over from Chris Beard. They've done well in their the transfer portal. Like, maybe that is better for Kansas. You're at the lesser of the Power Fives, and your football team's not going to be as bad. It's only going to get better, and you're playing any more basketball-centric conference. So maybe there's really no path that's bad for Kansas.
Great stuff there from Ari Temkin on last night's Almost Entirely Sports. Really just, again, a ton of things in there that things I never even would have thought twice about that he had an immediate read on in terms of, like, hey, right now, could the Big 12 become, could they make this pivot from the hunted to the hunter? I don't know, but the Big 12 and the AAC right now are probably the two conferences that are either about to get pillaged or will need to probably do some form of pillaging. And I am fascinated to see where they go from here. Could the Big 12 bring in an Arizona or an Arizona State? The TV deal that the Big 12 actually has themselves could end up not competing with the SEC, but could be competing with every other conference right now that is, again, potentially going to start poaching teams from the Big 12. The difference there is that the Big 12 is the one that's having the Jenga blocks pulled out from under them in the tower, being Texas and Oklahoma. So what comes next? Still TBD, still could be a long time left in this drama, and we'll find out as things continue to roll on. We will continue to roll on here on Sports Saturday. Whenever we come back, we'll hear from Trey Smith, Cornell Powell, and Noah Gray, three rookies from the Kansas City Chiefs draft class who spoke to the media today live from St. Joe. That's next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Chiefs rookies and quarterbacks and a handful of injured players that are there for some injury work all reported officially there yesterday, but the first practice was this morning, and then we heard from a few of the rookie class members that spoke to the media for the first time in a little while as they get to put on Chiefs helmets and are there in St. Joe for the first time. I mean, they were wearing shells at some point during OTAs and minicamps and all that, but training camp is sort of the official beginning of the 2021 season in my book, and we heard from Noah Gray, Cornell Powell, and Trey Smith, and we'll go in that order here. Starting with Noah Gray, an interesting case where he could be a guy that ends up having a really large role in this offense as he becomes a very unique weapon for the Andy Reid scheme as a kind of H-back, sort of flex tight end slot guy. Curious to hear what he says about his experience so far and where he looks to go from here. Here's new Chiefs tight end Noah Gray.
Noah, for the rookie, this is an opportunity to really connect with him. What was it like for you out there today as far as, you know, what you remember from OTAs and the things that you need to work on?
Yeah, OTAs was really a blessing for us. I don't know how the rookies last year did it, so I think we got to give a lot of credit to those guys who are sophomores now in the league. But going through OTAs really helped just from a knowledge standpoint and just understanding the basic kind of concepts that this offense has you to know. So it was definitely a huge help from that perspective. Just waiting to work on just everything. You know, out here today, there's a lot of things that in OTAs that I was asked to work on and keep building on. You know, route running, blocking, and we haven't put pads on yet, but when blocking comes, you know, that's going to be something that's going to need to continue to progress. But there's a lot of things in the route running game that I still need to get better at. You know, I'm still asking questions. Jody has been phenomenal. When Trav gets back, he's been a great teacher and mentor, and really all the other tight ends like Nick. You know, all those other guys, you know, Ev and Blake, they're just really a blessing to kind of be teammates and be a part of. So really credit to those guys for helping me progress along this journey.
Is there anything that you want to show when the pads come on that you can kind of sort of show to the coaching staff that maybe you just can't do on the season shorts during the OTA period?
I'm just going to continue to keep playing ball and doing what they ask me. You know, pads or no pads. You know, obviously we're very limited in terms of, you know, contact and stuff like that. But when the pads come on, I'll just do what I'm asked to do. It's nothing I'm really trying to prove out here. I'm just trying to get better like everybody else is.
I know we talked about it in the draft about how you were moved around a lot during Duke's offense and now getting more chances to look at this playbook. How comfortable, similar do you feel like those things can translate seamlessly to you?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that Duke taught me that's very similar to Coach Reed's offense and his philosophy. And I'm very grateful for that and grateful for Coach Cutcliffe and the rest of the staff there, Coach Ferris. So there's definitely a lot of things that I've been able to kind of take with me from them that translate over here. But like I said, you know, I'm just trying to continue to get a hold of the new intricacies that Coach Reed asked us to do, like everybody else's. So there's definitely stuff that translates, but there's still a lot of stuff that I'm learning and need to get better at.
You're joining the team that Super Bowl favorites, but honestly, is there a point which you realize what the standard was here and you had to raise that level?
Yeah, I understand the standard of the team, but every team in the league has a standard. You know, even though, you know, we may be looked at as a Super Bowl winning team like you had mentioned, you know, we have a standard here and I'm just trying to uphold that. I knew that coming in. I knew that as I was drafted. And just really credit to my teammates for kind of getting me up to speed on that and kind of rolling that out here on the practice field.
Now, when you were drafted, we talked a lot about Travis and comparisons to that. I'm just wondering, now that you've been in the offseason, what has he meant for you as you're continuing your transition to being a pro?
What has he meant for me?
Yeah, like to lead you into, you know, this experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous. Like I said on draft day, I don't think there's anyone else I'd rather be in the country to be able to learn under Travis Kelce, one of the best tight ends in the league. You know, right now it's a blessing. And to come out here and to be able to gain that knowledge from him and to learn from him every day and to be able to visualize and watch him on the field, that's been something that's been extremely key to me coming out and being able to execute my assignment. You know, and even guys like Blake and guys like Nick and other guys, like those guys have been in the system and they've been tremendous in helping me out with my development and just being able to come out here and execute what I need to do.
How do you think the break between
the years from your winning camp and now? Yeah, I've just been working like everybody else on the team has been grinding. You know, I was out in Kansas City for most of that, just kind of doing my part of what I need to do. To be, you know, the best possible teammate that I can be for my guys out here.
Did you attend the tight end meet?
I did not.
During an OTA, Patrick was mentioning how you had kind of a veteran kind of mindset going into the load breakdown. You know where to be. When you hear that from Patrick Mahomes, what's that mean to you? And how does that motivate you to be that player for him?
Yeah, it's just blessing that he thinks that of me, but I just understand that I need to come out here and keep grinding and keep hitting the playbook and keep practicing hard. I think from a mentality standpoint, for me, it just means that I just got to keep out here, keep going to practice, and keep doing, you know, the things that I know that I can do. Keep hitting that playbook as hard as I possibly can. You know, I don't look too much into that. You know, it's great that a teammate thinks that of me, but to be able to come out here and still be the best teammate that I can possible, that means the most to me, and I'm going to continue to do that.
There's Chiefs rookie tight end Noah Gray speaking to the media and to some carts and to some outdoor noises at training camp in St. Joe today. It'll be really interesting to see how exactly he ends up being used in this offense, as will be the case for Cornell Powell. He was the receiver out of Clemson who the Chiefs selected, theoretically, to step in and maybe be able to take some of that work that used to be occupied by Sammy Watkins. Here's Cornell Powell, the Chiefs rookie wide receiver.
Took a couple of days off, you know, just to relax, let my body rest, and then got right back to it. Went out to Florida, trained a little bit, but just try to stay at it, keep crafting, keep working, because I knew it was going to come out here, and it's a grind, you know, nonstop, so I got to be on my game every day, so.
Where did you train in Florida, and who did you train with?
I was just out there by myself, man, you know. I got all the tools, just got to learn how to use them, take them out of the toolbox, really getting in and out of breaks. Working on releases, working on finishing after the catch, so, and then being in the sun, you know, so.
These 3 days are really a chance for the rookies to connect what they learned to OTAs and get refreshed, kind of get their feet under them. How was it out there for you today as far as, you know, remembering OTAs and it all coming back to you? It seemed natural.
It was fun, man. It's good to be back. You know, it's finally football season. Just being able to go out there and do what I love with the guys is always a blessing, so. Just try to take it one day at a time. Don't let it overwhelm you. But at the same time, you got to study. You got to be persistent and just inconsistent. So just staying after it and then trying to go out there and translate the film to the field each and every day.
You know, was there anybody that you wanted to reach out to between the break to get a better perspective as you get ready for training camp, whether it was on this roster or guys elsewhere in the league?
I learned, man, it's nothing you can really – do to get ready for training camp besides doing it. You know, you learn from experience. So just coming out here, just making sure your conditioning is up, making sure that you know the plays, you know, knowing and being knowledgeable of the game and your assignment and your alignment will take you far, you know. So then the rest of it is just football at the end of the day.
Now, for you guys to get a connection before veterans get here, how much you want to
try to sustain? It's extremely important. You know, we're trying to show him that we could come out and make plays right away year one. And we want to gain his confidence, gain his trust. What have you been doing? It meant a lot, man. You know, I'm a Clemson guy. He's a Clemson legend. And then I just so happened to come to the Chiefs right after him. So, and then we wear the same number, you know. Maybe some Clemson in there, but just trying to keep that same mindset at Clemson, you know, best is the standard. Each and every day, and you know, out here, best is the standard. You know, you got to go out there, you got to make plays. You know, you got to perform day in and day out. So, just trying to do that.
What does it mean to be a wide receiver from Clemson? Like, is that
same? It's special. It's special. We're different. We wide receiver you for a reason. The numbers prove it. We have some of the best, well, the best receiver in the league is Tyreek Hill, but you know, the second best is DeAndre Hopkins from Clemson, and so you just gotta. Just got to uphold the standing when you get to the league.
What's the dorm life like? Did you bring anything special?
Yeah, man, you got to bring mattress pads. Because sleep is very important, very vital. And, you know, I don't know if you've been alone long. Last time y'all been in the dorm room, but it's not comfortable without the mattress pads. So definitely do that.
When's the last time you were in the dorm room?
Freshman year, but I will say I was fortunate enough to have a better band than that. So, so yeah, it was definitely different. Yeah, you know, Florida, it gets no hotter than Florida. And then you come out here, there's no trees, no shade. You just got to grind, man. You just got to be a dog. You got to dig deep, especially later practice goals, special teams is where you make your money at. And you got to be able to give max effort at the end of practice as you did at the beginning of practice. So there's no way to prepare for that other than being in the sun every day, getting that good sweat in, getting that conditioning up, and, you know, just working.
How much are you preparing to play?
I'm ready to go. All four phases, whatever coach needs me to do.
That it? Right,
thank y'all.
Thank you.
Chiefs rookie wide receiver Cornell Powell speaking to the media less than an hour ago. In St. Joseph, Missouri, as training camp kicked off today. Practice for the first time for those rookies. One more rookie to hear from Chiefs offensive lineman Trey Smith. He's the guard who really could have been a second or third round pick, but had some medical issues going into the draft. Medical issues really just from college. And the Chiefs ultimately ended up being able to snag him in the sixth round. Seemed very, very optimistic about his health and what they can make him, what they can do with him going forward. And he spoke to the media today as well.
Enjoyed it. Green, I got a lot out of it. Experience. It's about my second year. I would have gone last year with COVID, of course, but every time I come out of there, you learn a different tidbit, a different thing to add to your toolbox. So it's an excellent event. Duke's been doing it for a lot of years, and I really enjoyed it in Creighton. I got a lot out of it.
Creighton mentioned yesterday that Mitchell Schwartz was in your ear a lot. Was Mitchell in your ear as well?
Yeah, I actually had a chance to speak with him briefly, just asked him for some tips during training camp, so it was awesome finally getting to meet him. Just like basic stuff, you know, bring a bed pad, bring a comforter, things like that. It's gonna be a little chilly in the dorm.
You mentioned each year at OL National, you take away different tidbits of your game. What in particular do you think that you took away from that camp?
That was really what I do too much. Just a couple things with jump settings and how to look at it a little bit differently. And just some different things in terms of hand usage.
Yeah. One of the things you said this offseason that kind of stuck out is you like to bring a certain amount of violence on the field to the game. Why is that so critical in your particular game and what you bring to the table?
It's just why I play the game. I mean, I love beating people up. I love just like knocking someone down, rolling over them, you know, just talking in the head after the play's over with. It's just sort of my personality. If you know me, I'm sort of a goon, but I just really enjoy the violence aspect of playing football.
For the rookies this time of year, coming in for these couple of days, it's really about trying to connect what they learned during OTAs and getting ready. What about this for you? Were you able to carry over? What did you really kind of need to be reinforced in this?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, everything needs to be reinforced. You know, I'm always chasing perfection, which is something you can't attain as human beings. But, you know, just the little nuances, that's something I have to take better care of in my game. You know, paying attention to detail, not being too over-aggressive with a lot of things I do, and, you know, just being efficient with my play. But like I said, you know, we're always chasing perfection, but we got to do it every day, and it's unattainable. But there's so much I have to work on my game, I'm not even close.
What excites you most about the playbook, getting a chance to look at it for weeks now, knowing you're going to put it on the field?
Yeah, it's a high-octane offense. You know, it's truly a blessing to be here with the Chiefs organization. You know, I'm playing with guys, you know, I looked up to as kids. You know, seeing like Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, you know, those type of guys around me, I'm excited about the opportunity to be here. I'm really blessed that I decided to make a difference.
When did you realize what the standard was here, the expectation? Obviously, you knew what you were coming into, but now that you're part of it, when did it hit?
It slapped me first, individual period with Coach Head. It was brutal, but that was when I understood, you know, winning culture in football, the expectation that you have to meet every day to be a Chiefs football player.
And last time we talked to you, you mentioned that your dad had a company in Kansas City. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, my dad, I believe their headquarters is based out of Kansas City, Busco, still. Okay. So he actually has been down here multiple times on business trips and such. So we're pretty familiar there, and he was, I'm not as much.
How beneficial was that time? OTAs, rookie mini camp, being around the vets before you came here, they can come here with that knowledge already, that experience around them.
I know it's priceless. Just hearing guys, you know, from across the league that went through the whole experience without having a rookie mini camp at OTAs last year, you know, it was definitely a priceless opportunity to get acclimated with my teammates, get acclimated with the playbook, the system, coaches, and get a general feel of Kansas City as well.
Anyone else? Thanks, Trey.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Smith, rookie guard for the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, first of all, the idea that first individual practice there with Andy Heck kind of got a new idea of the speed that the Chiefs were working at and everything is kind of funny, just because you can only imagine what that practice was exactly like. So just kind of a fun image there of going from an SEC starter, like he played at Tennessee, not Southeastern Tennessee Tech A&M, you know, like he's playing the big boy conference that OU and Texas are about to ruin the Big 12 to go hop into. Like I've heard it just means more in the SEC. And still to go from starting in the SEC to practicing and getting in the individual drills for the first time with Chiefs offensive line coach Andy Heck is just kind of a funny thought. And I at this point, I will be the one that pumps the brakes on the idea of him starting day one, just because I think that the clear rookie starter is Creed Humphrey. I hope It would be great if Trey Smith won that right guard job. Joe Tooney will be on the left side. But with Tooney on the left side, that right guard spot could be Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Kyle Long, I think, was going to be the main competition for LDT, and I would have believed that one of those guys would have gotten the job. But then Kyle Long suffers that injury earlier in the offseason. It's going to probably keep him out through camp, which is a tough spot to end up in. Probably missing preseason games there as well, of course. And that, again, that's a tough needle to thread, depending on what his exact timeline is. And so if Long is out, maybe the silver lining of that is that Trey Smith is able to get those second-team reps that may have otherwise gone to either LDT or Long, whoever was trailing in that matchup. I have high hopes for Trey Smith. I really do. I hope he's starting in 2022. I would take that right now. If you had an offensive line that goes Orlando Brown, Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and perhaps Lucas Niang going in the 2022, that would be remarkable. If it happens in 2021, happy for it. Thanks to Alec Lewis. Thanks to Marco Marquez for running the show. I am Joshua Briscoe. This has been Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.